Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful, and I've never eaten an Insanity Pepper, so I can't really identify with Homer's hallucination, but I'm sure that's how it happens.
How do you feel after you eat 12 donuts?
A little bloated, but that's about it.
Okay. Maybe you just need Insanity Donuts.
Indeed. Sanity Donuts for my Sanity Whale.
No, I'm missing what? Reference?
It's to the System Mastery podcast. Don't worry about it.
Hi, guys. We are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. For only $2 a month, gain access to all of our bonus content and help us keep the show going. Also, you can go to the newly renamed Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review, subscribe, leave nice things about us. Helps us out. Helps the show find new listeners. We appreciate that. You know, or wherever you listen to us, you know, if they have some sort of recommendation system, we'd obviously appreciate you spreading the word. On to this week's episode, El Viaje Misterioso de Nuestro Homer, aka the Mysterious Voyage of Homer, episode 3, F24, originally aired January 5th, 1997, written by Ken Keeler, directed by Jim Reardon. Finished 34th in the ratings with a Nielsen rating of 9.0, equivalent to approximately 8.7 million viewing households. It was the highest rated show on Fox at week following. I'm so used to saying following. Beating Millennium. Woo.
Whoa, the Weird X-Files spinoff? It was able to beat that?
I don't think, it wasn't a direct spinoff, was it? I thought it was just like another Chris Carter joint that was weird.
I'm pretty sure it was a spinoff.
Was there a direct connection? I thought that Millennium was just another Chris Carter show that dealt with science fiction stuff. And, like, Lance Henriksen never appeared in The X-Files, did he?
I'm pretty sure he did.
If you say so, Matt, I haven't watched all The X-Files.
I'll keep looking while you continue to...
The couch gag is the family parachutes to the couch. Homer's parachute fails, and he falls. Another very simple, reliable, physical gag. Homer... Inflicting pain on Homer is always, like, an easy out, I think. Like, you need a quick gag. Just hurt Homer.
That's true. It's generally the way it goes. The same thing happens in Excalibur when you hurt Captain Britain. It's like, oh, they're the big dumb person, so you can hurt them without it feeling too bad. It's okay to laugh at their pain.
Excalibur? That's what we're pulling this week?
Yeah. Have you not read all of Excalibur?
I haven't read any of Excalibur.
Oh, sad.
I don't think it's that sad, Matt. I don't see anything fundamental about Captain Britain.
I would disagree with you, but it turns out you're correct. Millennium is not a spinoff, but there were crossover episodes, so it exists in the same universe as X-Files.
It's the Chris Carterverse.
The Carterverse.
It was those two shows and The Lone Gunman.
Yes, The Lone Gunman. Canceled before its time.
This episode of The Simpsons guest stars Johnny Cash as the Space Coyote, or Coyote, whatever you want to refer to him.
Definitely Space Coyote.
I mean,
Talking Space Coyote, because he did not voice the talking dog, just so everyone knows.
No, that was not Johnny Cash. That was not the low, lovely tone of Johnny Cash, who does a spectacular job.
He really does. I mean, you can tell he speaks with the gravitas of a voice actor.
Yeah, and apparently they were very excited to get him. The role was down to him and Bob Dylan, and Bob Dylan turned it down. So they were very excited
to get him. Screw that guy.
This is Bob Dylan. He probably barely aware of The Simpsons at all.
That's true. He had to go on being the voice of a generation.
Yep, that's him. Did such a great job.
Yep.
Did it just a spectacular. Okay, the episode begins with Marge, with the family. The family at the breakfast table. It's the weekend. Homer's trying to look for something to do. He goes to the newspaper, of course. And there is a big section missing, suspiciously with Marge holding scissors that she uses to trim the drapes. Not suspicious at all, Marge.
No. You have to trim your drapes every couple of weeks or so they'll just grow out of control.
Especially ones with corn cobs on them. It's very important. we go through that where Homer's bored at home, and obviously Marge is hiding something from him. We don't know what it is. He gets a call from Lenny. Marge knocks out the phone cord with her vacuum cleaner before Homer can hear what Lenny's trying to tell him about a ride and the great annual something. And eventually, Homer is dangling Santa's La Hopper. It's a dog dangling afternoon. I have those occasionally. And Marge is smoking cigarettes. Not very typical Marge behavior. And Homer...
Well, you know, it's that rich, satisfying smell of tobacco.
Yeah, it's so good. It's
that
so
only
good.
Most of the time makes you want to vomit.
So delicious. But Homer gets some fresh air and figures out what he's been missing.
What's wrong with you? What are you trying to hide from me? What's that smell? Onions? Chili powder? Cumin? Juicy ground chuck? It's chili! Oh my god, I'm missing the chili cook-off! I'm missing the cook-off! It's going on right now and I'm missing
it! All right, I was trying to keep it from you, but I had a good reason. Every time you go to that cook-off, you get drunk as a poet on payday. Remember last year?
Look at me! I'm a puffy pink cloud! Oh, well, of course, everything looks bad if you remember it.
Well, yeah, I mean, memory is never as much fun as it actually being in the moment. You're supposed to have as much fun as possible and then black out from being drunk. That way you don't have to actually remember it. All you remember is a vague sense of happiness.
I mean, I'm down with vague senses of happiness. I'm cool with that. No? No, is that bad?
No, sorry.
Okay. This is the crux of this episode. It starts right here. Is Marge is embarrassed. Marge doesn't want Homer to go to the cook-off because she doesn't want to be embarrassed by him again, and she was keeping it from him. You know, hiding it so that he would not go. And this is a very simple thing. And I think this episode fundamentally is pretty simple. It just executes on that. I love this episode. I'm gonna go on and on. I was watching this the entire time. I was just smiling. I was just happy. It works so well for me. And I think this fundamental misunderstanding and miscommunication between Homer and Marge is kind of where it all kicks off from. And I think it's very important to kind of following the plot of this and why I think it sets itself apart from most of the Homer and Marge relationship problem episodes. Homer does put on chili boots.
Well, it's important if you're not eating chili in your special boots, you know, are you really even eating chili? That's like eating Cincinnati chili. It's not really the same thing.
Chili does not have spaghetti in it.
Nor cinnamon.
I can deal with cinnamon in chili, like a small amount, just to give it a little bit of a, you know, that little kick of some, mm-hmm. I'd make it, set it apart from other chilies. But you start throwing spaghetti in there, come on.
Well, it's more like a bolognese than an actual chili, but
okay, then bolognese. There you go. It's not chili. But Marge said, "Okay, we can go." Which Homer doesn't even debate her at this point. Like, she's just setting these standards, and Homer's like getting ready to go to the cook-off. But she makes Homer promise that he will not drink at the cook-off, which Homer agrees to. If that's a fair demand. Who knows? But Homer agrees to not drink.
Which is unlike Homer. Homer is usually like, but alcohol, that's why I do most things in life.
I mean, yeah, it's like, and I imagine you're going to a chili cook-off, you're eating a lot of chili, you're going to want to drink beer too. It's like part of the deal. It's like going to routines whenever I go to certain kind of events. It may not be always be drinking beer, but it always may be like, this is a part of this. This is a part of the fun is the drinking the beer or eating these very specific types of food or going to a certain place and doing a certain thing. But Homer agrees because he wants to go to the cook-off, and they get there pretty quickly. Like this episode is very tight. It doesn't waste a lot of time with anything. Like, it jumps to the quick of everything you need to know. They get to the cook-off and they stop by Lenny's arts and crafts stall booth.
Well, yeah, I mean, you never at any food festival, there'll never be just food. I went to one last night, actually, where about 2/3 of the booths were food and the others were random people hawking their crap.
Was there any spice racks involvement?
There were, actually.
Okay, good. Well, Marge checks out the spice racks.
I'm going to go get some vegetarian chili before they get desperate and add meat.
I'm going to go claim some valuables at the Lost and Found.
Ooh, look at that adorable spice rack. 8 spices? Some must be doubles.
Oregano? What the hell?
Marge, we're missing the chili. Less artsy, more fartsy.
Homer, I happen to like handicrafts much more than stuffing my face.
Fine, I'll come find you when I'm ready to stop having fun.
Remember your promise. No drinking.
Why did you even go past oregano? What the hell?
Some things, I don't just pull things because they're funny, Matt. Sometimes I pull things because they have emotional importance to the episode. But yes,
I guess.
See a fundamental difference in why we pull clips. Uh-huh. Marge, yes, it firmly establishes Marge as this cook who doesn't even know what oregano is. Like it's really great.
He doesn't do a lot of Italian cooking, I guess.
Well, it's my idea of Marge is, you know, they're boomers, and baby boomers were taught to cook using a bunch of just like crap that came in cans. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Like you, I think the one dish that makes me like that is epitomizes it to me is green bean casserole.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm not a fan myself. You take green beans, you take a big can of cream mushroom soup, and you take some French fried onion, and that's a dish. There's no cooking in that. It's like, it's just piling stuff into a casserole and throwing it in an oven. And I feel like that's what I think that's how Marge cooks most of the time. Like, I think Marge is a good cook for what she knows, but I don't think she necessarily, I think what she knows is largely the stuff that she was taught probably by her mother, which is probably, and by home ec classes or something, which is probably garbage like that. Not what I think of as real cooking, including using stuff like oregano.
I believe it's oregano.
Oh, okay. Excuse me. They go their separate ways. And that's another interesting thing to me in this episode is that in what is effectively a relationship episode between Homer and Marge, they barely spend any time together in this. It is mostly them apart and mostly Homer apart. Marge goes off to she goes to the square dance area or line dance.
That's the important part.
Is it square dancing or is it line dancing? I'm not sure.
It sounds more like square dancing. Line dancing tends to be with more modern music, whereas square dancing is you know, a hoedown kind of time.
But Helen Lovejoy and Reverend Lovejoy are dancing, and Helen's not very nice. She's very. I don't think Helen Lovejoy is ever really. I don't think we've ever seen her actually be nice.
That's true.
In The Simpsons, but in this particular case, she really needles Marge.
Howdy, howdy, Marge and Homer. Oh, my mistake. Homer's not even with you. Probably just knocking back a few refreshments.
Thank you for your concern, Helen. Homer isn't drinking today.
Oh, I think it's lovely that he said that, and that you believed him.
Now, Helen, let us not glory in Homer's binge drinking. There, but for the grace of God, goes Marge herself.
And that is... I think that what Helen says is important because it is literally feeding into Marge's worst fear. It is because it is brutally honest. It's very mean, but it is not like dishonest in any way. Like
it is not inaccurate.
No, Marge is concerned and didn't want to go because she was worried about Homer's binge drinking. And Helen plants the exactly wrong seed in Marge's head at that exact moment. Like, I think that I like this episode because it's not, like, necessarily going after a fundamental problem in Marge and Homer's relationship, but only in, like, how a very simple little miscommunication between the two and, planted things said by other people outside of the relationship can escalate it. Like, I don't know. Marge gets more upset because she's also dealing with the fact that she doesn't want to be viewed as like this embarrassing wife who can't control her husband, et cetera, et cetera. And Helen's is basically representative of the greater whole of Springfield and Marge's fear.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's partially that, but I feel like Marge is a strong enough person that if she wasn't having those exact same fears deep down, she would be able to ignore it. But you know, obviously, this is what Marge is really concerned about, and you know, she's just hoping that Homer can hold on. And Helen Lovejoy is not making things better.
No, she's
as you said, that's never her intent.
No, she's we even see that again later on with Reverend Lovejoy is like trying to hold her. He's like, come on. stop it. You know, that's too much. And then we get a long sequence with Homer at the cook-off. And I love this Homer in this scene.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's competent. He's in his element. This is Homer being good at something.
I feel like this is why Homer wanted to go. Like, not even to drink beer, because he can drink beer anywhere. Homer wanted to go because he is the chili master.
Exactly. And you don't get to see him. Homer doesn't excel at much. He's bad at a lot of stuff. And I think the drinking beer is kind of incidental to his fun at the festival. I think he drinks beer because if there's beer somewhere, he's probably going to drink beer. I mean, that's a lot of people's attitudes. Like, if they go to a show, or if they go to a concert, or if they go to a festival, an outdoor festival like this, and there's beer, they're like, yeah, I'll have a few beers. It's part of they're here. Why not? I'm out having fun. It's fine. And Homer is, like, respected here. And
I don't know if respected so much as feared.
It's a thin line there. I think there's both. We see him walk around with his own spoon carved from a larger spoon, and is sampling all the chili. And he seems like an unofficial judge at even. Like, I don't know if there is there most chili cook-offs. It is a cook-off. You'd think there'd be some sort of judging going on, but Homer certainly his opinion seems to hold a lot of weight in the cook-off scene, I guess. The food critic episode, much later on, they kind of revisit that idea with Homer kind of having this domain over food. But he tries Flanner's chili, which Flanner's advertises as five alarm chili.
Five alarm chili, eh? Mm-hmm. One, two. Hey, what the big idea?
Oh, I admit it. It's only two alarm, two and a half tops. I just wanted to be a big man in front of the kids.
Daddy, are you going to jail?
We'll see, son. We'll see.
That's right, because lying about chili, that's they'll throw you in jail for that.
I don't even call it lying. That's marketing. It's not, like, I guess if you want to call marketing, I mean, marketing is lying, but...
In marketing terms, that's called puffery, and it's totally legal.
Puffery? Is that real?
That is literally what it is called.
Okay.
There's a difference between puffery and lying in advertising, and it's the difference between big FTC fines and, you know, just what everyone does.
Okay. That's what Flanders, if Flanders is guilty of that, that's all it is. I think that he's been found out by Homer, but there's a lot. I love all the background gags in this. I like all the months chili. It takes weeks to make months. Mo has one. Mr. Burns has chili. Like, they all have a lot of the townspeople all have their own little chili stalls. It's all, like, very fun, interesting, kind of very quick gags that also add a lot of depth and background to it. Makes Springfield feel like a real place. This feels like authentic. This isn't just like a plot device, even though it is, but they do the legwork. I mean, everything is a plot device, but the difference between a plot device and honest, real, I don't know, emotion in any kind of scene is that extra work, foundational work to make it feel like a lived-in place. And that is what they do just with those little very quick shortcut gags for, you know, all the townspeople. Marge...
It's true. In a real chili cook-off, you probably have more businesses doing it, but in Springfield, it's just individual people.
Yeah. There's... I mean, Mr. Burns is his business. Mo is a business, literally.
I don't know if Mo is a business. Mo's Tavern, but was it Mo's Chili or Mo's Tavern's Chili?
Does he have to explicitly tie his business into it?
Yes, he does.
I feel like Springfield is a place where you just go, oh, it's Mo from Mo's. Like, I don't think they have, like, you go, oh, it's Mr. Burns from the power plant. I think it's too small a town to warrant, like...
Maybe you're right. If there are not, you know, large chain stores that are the ones doing it. Which, you know, in a lot of cases, that's true. But in Springfield, you're right, it's probably more small mom-and-pop kind of places. So you're like, oh, that's Mo. He runs the bar.
Yeah, the only bar. Are there any... I don't think... There are other bars. We've seen it, but they're not...
Oh, there are lots of other bars.
But yeah. They're not Mo's. They're not Homer's specific bar. We do see, again, Marge at the dance again. But this time, she's approached by Smithers in a spectacular... outfit, a spec- like his he has a neon light up jacket that is bedazzled.
Well, yeah, he's the honky tonk specialist.
Yeah, he wouldn't honk the tonk if he couldn't. No, he couldn't honk the honk if he couldn't tonk the tonk. I thought it was very interesting. I was at reading the news group this week about this very fact that they're like, well, Smithers is dancing with a woman. He can't be gay. I'm like, oh, man, you guys.
Really?
Have you
really?
Not? You don't. Oh, you.
You don't know any gay people, do you?
I'm like, they don't. You don't know how life works, do you? Like, you don't have to. You could dance with anyone. It doesn't. Dancing is.
You're not. Dancing does not equal sex. World of knowledge.
Those aren't the same thing. But. Homer, and they have the music from Good, the Bad, the Ugly playing over this. It adds to kind of the Western feel, the Western themes, like even into the second act with Homer's hallucination is very Southwestern, and Carlo Castaneda and all that stuff is very like, you know, Native American, like desert and cacti and all that kind of imagery. And they feed into that, I think, with this, with the, I mean, they take that kind of chili cook-off, you know, Southwest Texas style like ideas, and they add it to the theme of the episode, and it really enhances it just by like just adding another layer of thematic connection there, and by playing that music, by having, you know, they have those camera angles of the eyes, just like in Good, the Bad, the Ugly. It feels, you know, Homer's a gunslinger in this. In this scene, he's
not sure he even spins his spoon like a gun.
Yeah, he does. And like it adds to that effect of us making feel like this is Homer feels special now because he is special in this situation. He in most times Homer is not that. But in this, he is the most important guy. And he has a showdown, even the Western style showdown with Chief Wiggum. Appropriately, honestly, like I like the choice of having Wiggum be the penultimate chili master because he is the law,
and Homer is the rebel outlaw.
Yeah, exactly. We meet Wiggum's chili and the mercilessly Guatemalan insanity peppers of Quetzalcoatlanago.
Hello, Chief.
Afternoon, Homer. Care for some chili? I've added an extra ingredient just for you. The merciless peppers of Quetzalcoatlanago. Grown deep in the jungle primeval by the inmates of a Guatemalan insane asylum.
Wiggy, my chili's getting cold.
You wouldn't drink.
But I need it!
So, the bold and prideful Homer has to run from the heat.
Although, to be fair, no one else will try Wiggum's chili at all. Like, Wiggum won't even try his own chili, so is he really that much of a wuss?
I think obviously, good chili has nothing to do with how hot it is. Heat is honestly... I think not honestly necessary in a good chili. It can be there, but I don't think it's required. But
that's true. All the best chilies are pretty mild, and then you add the hot sauce you like. Because there's a lot of different flavors of hot sauce.
I feel like the way that Wiggum and Homer talk to each other, the way this whole scene is framed, it feels very much like this is not, obviously this is not the first time they've had this showdown. I feel like this is a thing that happens every year at this cook-off, is that Homer comes in and... eats every chili and is this bold gunslinger type character who will criticize any chili that he feels doesn't meet his standard. And, you know, it seems to tell the story that Wiggum has been hurt by Homer in the past, and Wiggum doesn't really care if no one else eats his chili or if anyone even dares to try it. It's more about getting over on Homer, and that's all that matters.
That's true. Obviously, Homer is a great white whale.
I don't think Wiggum is not nearly as fanatical as Ahab, so I don't think that would work as a good comparison. Although I mean obviously he is I'm trying to think of another great rivalry in fiction that fits it. I don't know. Ahab's not too bad. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. If I think about it, I probably could come up with a million more. But and Homer, and there's that another fundamental, just a misunderstanding, miscommunication there between Marge and Homer. And I think it speaks to a disconnect in why I don't think Marge understands why Homer. I think Marge. Do you think Marge thinks that Homer goes there just to drink?
I don't think she does. I mean, I feel like she understands that for Homer, drinking is a side thing, but she knows that what drinking leads to for Homer is bad. So she tries to push him away from it as much as possible. And when she sees him going back on his word for any reason, she becomes irate, which, you know, to be fair, I feel like he should have at least been given the opportunity to explain.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, regardless, I'm not entirely sure that she thinks that. I don't think she might understand that Homer loves chili cook-off for more than drinking, but I don't think she fully understands how he probably feels when he's the most important guy there, like being feared / respected. Like, I feel like she doesn't completely understand that feeling in him, and she probably jumps to the worst conclusion possible when she sees him drinking that beer. It doesn't give him the time to explain himself, because honestly, it's not a good look when you're drinking 6 glasses of beer at once.
No, 1 glass of beer, maybe she'd be like, Homer, what you doing? But 6, that's binge drinking territory.
Yeah, it's not great to do all that. I mean, it makes sense because his mouth is on fire. He would try to drink something, anything. That's also great visuals with the ice cream. Him trying to put ice cream in his mouth, ice cream melting before he even gets to his tongue. And Homer is dumber than Ralph in this very short moment.
Yep, sure is.
And Homer is going to drink from a candle, and Ralph tells him, no, don't do that. And then Homer's like, no, I'm going to. Coats his tongue with wax to even the playing fields, I guess. I think that is his intention. It is this one-upmanship and to reclaim the feeling he gets when he is the cock of the walk, the most important guy, the gunslinger figure at the cook-off, and he needs to reclaim that feeling. He has to beat Wiggum at his own game. So he comes back with his tongue coated in wax. It makes me think of like Back to the Future 3 when Marty puts on the basically the bulletproof
metal plate.
Yeah, the metal plate that protects him. It's like he can't win fair, but who cares? You know, this isn't it's not about winning fair. And Homer comes back to reclaim his respect.
Hey everybody, look who's back. It's the big baby. Oh, this porridge is too hot. Oh, wow, wow, wow. Want some more, do you? Well, sure. Heck, it's not my job to talk people out of killing themselves.
North, please.
Good Lord, this can't be happening.
By our medical logic, steam should be shooting out of his ears.
His ears if we're lucky.
Well, Chief, don't quit your day job. Whatever that is.
Yep, whatever that is. Also, Dr. Hibbert's medical opinion is never as reliable as you would hope it would be.
No. Yes, I can't imagine a situation where steam would come out of people's ears. But, I mean, the fact that Homer is even completely unaware of the tropes that he is playing into just makes it even funnier to me. Whatever that is, don't quit your day job. he eats four peppers there, right? Want to say he swallows them whole like a duck,
which is a Homer tradition.
Pigs tend to chew. Ducks swallow food whole. But those insanity peppers aren't sitting so well.
My finest hour. And Marge wasn't even here to see it.
Ooh,
I don't feel so good.
you gonna help me?
Well, sure, buddy. I'd be happy to help out. What can I do?
Doodly doo, doodly 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 hobbly hoodly hobbly hoodly hobbly goobble gobble goobble gobble gabba gabba.
Goo goo gajoob. Let him go, Ralph. He knows what he's doing.
I know why I'm out to call him.
Yep. Rah, 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 rah. Everyone knows that.
The animation in this, in the beginning, Homer is beginning to go crazy. He did eat 4 insanity peppers, so what do you expect? They do great animation of those characters, they distort and fall apart, and the sound design is great. We get a Ramones, a Beatles, and a Peanuts reference in the span of like 15 seconds. And the way those characters look and the way they are disturbing and weird distortions of their actual selves is really, really good. And really sells Homer's going crazy. I also like the bit right before that when he says, "I wish Marge was here. I wish Marge was here to see it." His victory.
Yeah, because it shows you that Marge is very important to him. So
yeah, and it's I think Homer's part in this is that, you know, he doesn't, you know, I think both of them are kind of unwilling. They, like, you know, Marge wants to see the arts and crafts stuff, and she doesn't even want to come in the first place because she's worried about Homer drinking, and like, they're just, it's a fundamental part of relationships, like, of an easy, it's an easy thing to get wrong and, like, fail to see your spouse's or partner's perspective on a thing. And then suddenly, I feel like that is what this episode falls into, and is that Homer doesn't understand, you know, they don't understand what the other is wanting and what they are seeing. And even, I think, interlaced with all of that, neither of them ever lose sight about, like, them caring about each other or wanting their company or not loving them, but it is more about not understanding something. And this is just, like, the kind of the beginning of Homer's journey, honestly, as he wanders off into a field, I guess, after breaking through a fence, knowing exactly what he's doing. We go to commercial.
And when we come back, we are steadily inside Homer's vision, which is a very stylized, weirdly colored version of the Southwest. Homer basically goes through a whole bunch of weird things where his pupils are blowing up and he looks into the water and the water jumps up and wraps around him and becomes a snake. And it's really weird in every possible way. It's a very visual sequence that I really encourage you to go watch. It's very well done. The animation is even more fluid than usual, and it looks real enough but unusual enough that you really believe that Homer is freaking the heck out. There's one point where he realizes that as he walks, the sun is either rising or setting, so he does it fast enough that he eventually breaks the sun, like you do.
Yes,
go ahead. I was going to say, that's the way it works. I really like the fact that it actually becomes dark when that happens. So it's one of those things that actually seems appropriate, because obviously in the real world it is becoming dark.
Yeah, they do a David Silverman hand animated all of this. None of this was sent to Korea.
Wow.
So because he wanted it, David Silverman wanted it specifically to look this way. He didn't want to give it to someone else. It is, you know, heavily influenced by Carlos Castaneda, who advocated, you know, hallucinogenic drug use, perhaps made up some facts about Native Americans' spirit journeys and all this stuff. But this episode certainly is inspired by that general imagery, and you can see it in a lot of like Dance of the Wolves or other kind of films that kind of try and delve into mysticism and spiritualism of Native American cultures. But it is a mix of all. There's 3D animation in here. There's more intricate style of 2D animation that is different than The Simpsons generally is. And there is some actual live action footage in there too, with like, I believe the clouds overhead at one point is actually just live action footage that is just meshed into the 2D and 3D animation to make it,
which makes it look even more out of this world and crazy.
Yeah. It makes everything very surreal. You know, obviously Dolly and the School of Surrealism is also mixed in here. Obviously you can see that in a lot of places as well. This is the best animation in The Simpsons to me. Like if you're going to take something that's outside of their typical style, this is by far the best example of it.
It's true, because it mixes almost every weird form of animation and filmmaking in general in one to cause something that's so surreal that it has to be crazy. And it basically this next segment is all Homer reacting to that, because after Homer breaks the sun, we cut to Marge, who is looking for Homer, and learns from Helen that Homer got super drunk and made an ass of himself, in her own words, which we know to not be true. But, you know, I'm sure to people who saw Homer as a fluffy pink cloud in previous years because he was drunk probably just assumed something similar was happening this year. Not that he had eaten insanity peppers, even though they watched him eat insanity peppers. So,
well, yeah. You know, Helen Lovejoy wasn't actually, she was dancing for most of the, like, she was not part of, like, she wasn't the cook-off part of the festival, so who knows what she actually saw. And I don't really think it matters much to Lovejoy, Helen Lovejoy. I think she was just, like, she's one of those people who likes delivering bad news. Like, even Reverend Lovejoy is like, come on, you don't need it. Don't be that kind of person. And, like, he's trying to control her to a certain extent. And, like, it didn't really matter if it's honest. Like, it's close enough that it's good gossip, so that's all that Helen Lovejoy cares about.
Indeed. We then cut back to Homer, who is still in his weird dreamland, and has decided to spell out helps with rocks, but something causes issues with that.
Hey, buddy, get back there with the other rocks.
Huh? A tortoise? Follow the...
This must be why I'm here. Follow the what? Follow the what? Hurry up! Ow!
Get moving, you stupid... When I'm kicking you, that means hurry up. Come on. Gah!
Oh, you want me to climb that, huh? No problemo. Oh! This is because I kicked you, isn't it?
Yes, just so you're aware, those squeaking sounds at the end were the tortoise shaking his head yes. So let it be known that kicking a dream guide tortoise is not the best idea, no matter how frustrated you are, because they will make you walk up a giant pyramid.
No,
life lessons we all have to learn at some point.
I like that. I mean, there is this is a technical spiritual journey for Homer, you know, whatever. Like, but I like the fact, like, they tie in physical labor to it. It is not simply just like, oh, Homer has to understand something. It is, he is literally walking around in this. He has to climb a pyramid to get to this, to get to the answer of what he's looking for. He has to learn not to just kick things when he's upset.
Patience is kind of important with these things.
Yes, very important. Again, and also that animation when he's running across the desert and his stride, just he starts popping up off the ground like he's on the moon or something. The gravity seems to be different. Like, even those little small touches there really effectively communicate, like, this is not Springfield. This is not normal. This is, we don't know where Homer is, but this doesn't operate by the normal rules.
Yes, especially when Homer shouts dough and clouds form dough in the sky. Pretty obvious we're no longer in Kansas/Springfield anymore.
Yes.
But at this point, we kick back to Marge and the kids, who are leaving the festival without Homer, because Marge is extremely angry at this point. Bart has a chili hat, but Marge is unconcerned with that.
But Matt, how else do you know when it's time for chili?
Some other type of clock, I assume. Maybe a reminder on your phone. I don't think you really need a clock and a hat.
They didn't have smartphones in 1997.
They had phones that had alarms on them, because I definitely had that.
You had a phone in 1997?
I did. It only had 10 minutes of talk time per month, and the battery lasted about 45 minutes.
Did it have a briefcase with it?
It did not, no.
Oh, okay.
It almost fit in a pocket.
Oh, okay, got it. Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. That is that kind of. Marge says that she's more than happy for Homer to come home in a taxi or a police car, either one. She doesn't really care. At this point, however, Homer, at the top of the pyramid, meets his spirit guide.
I hate this place! Why am I here?
You are on a quest for knowledge.
Who said that?
Fear not, Homer. I am your spirit guide.
Hiya.
There is a lesson you must learn.
If it's about laying off the insanity peppers, I'm way ahead of you.
No, I speak of a deeper wisdom. The problem, Homer, is that the mind is always chattering away with a thousand thoughts at once.
Yeah, that's me, all right.
Clarity is the path to inner peace.
But what should I do? Should I meditate? Should I get rid of all my possessions?
Are you kidding? If anything, you should get more possessions. You don't even have a computer.
You know, I have been meaning to take a spiritual journey, and I would... Hey! Back it off!
Sorry. I am a coyote.
Look, just give me some inner peace or I'll mop the floor with you.
Good. Your mind is in a state of readiness, so listen well. To make yourself complete, you must find your soulmate.
Soulmate?
Your kindred spirit, the one with whom you share an unspoken bond, a profound, mystical understanding.
That's it? Well, that's Marge. Big deal. Great spiritual quest, Wolfie. My soulmate is Marge.
Is it?
Yes, many wonderful things in there when Homer says that his mind is chattering away and we hear nothing because that's what's in Homer's head.
It's I don't know. That Johnny Cash does a terrific job there as the coyote. The coyote's design in itself is really good. It's really it looks different than anything you would see in a normal episode of the Simpsons. It doesn't follow the same kind of design guide. It is a completely different. You know, it's boxy and weird edges and stuff. It doesn't look real. It looks like a cartoon, but it functions really well in this kind of weird dreamscape that we're in. And Homer's befuddlement when he asks, when the coyote asks Homer, you know, who's his soulmate? And, you know, Homer's like, yeah, Marge. And he's like, you sure? And like, that's, I like that just very, like, Homer's like, wait, what? Like, I'm not sure up until this point Homer has ever doubted that Marge is the woman for him.
And neither have the rest of us when we've seen what she has been willing to go through for him, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a vital part of the show. It is a foundation of the show is Homer and Marge's relationship, obviously. I think, like, we've talked about recently how the Homer and Marge relationship episodes – by this point are getting a little stale. Like, but I feel like this episode takes a different tack with it entirely. It is not necessarily just, how's their relationship doing? It's, but like, do they have a fundamental, do they understand each other? Do they, are not just like, is their marriage healthy, but are they actually, like, it takes a deeper, broader kind of look at the relationship. And more importantly, I think their relationship problems are usually rooted in Marge's dissatisfaction with Homer because Homer does something stupid.
Right.
And in this, I feel like Marge is unhappy with him, but I feel like it is on her end. It is a relatively minor, it is a fight. She's upset. She'll get over it. In this case, Homer isn't just, it's not that he's upset at Marge or like it is angry or something. It's because he has like now an inherent doubt about the fundamental of their relationship. Like, did I enter this relationship with someone I love and I have children with? Is there some sort of greater cosmic force that is telling me that we are not meant to be, that this is actually, I feel like a lot of times their relationship, especially in later seasons, the problems, it really devolves into hyperbole, where it, like, I think we've touched on before, like, after the movie, I feel like they should have never done another Homer-Marge relationship episode. I think that's, like, they did it. That was the, like, they couldn't have done it more than that. And this episode feels honest and real about any relationship you're in. Like, you're in a marriage, it's not always about a problem with the other person. I feel like the interesting thing to me in this is that Homer is kind of being introspective in a way we hardly ever see.
It's true, because like you said, usually the Homer and Marge episodes are, you know, Marge being upset something Homer did. They're very rarely Homer actually going through an exploration of how he feels. Pretty much in every single one, it's always about Homer, you know, loving Marge and finding some way to show that to her. This is refreshing, honestly. It's very unusual, and like you said, eventually these episodes really start to drag on because there are so many of them in so many different ways. But in this case, it's something new, and I would like to see more of these. Maybe even, like, I feel like it's always the Homer Marge relationship. There are very few episodes that are canonically heavily about the relationship of other family members to Marge, which I think is really lacking, because I think the kids' relationship, especially to their mother, is something you don't see a whole lot of, and would be very, it would be fertile ground for something new.
Yeah, and I think any time the show goes to introspection versus some outside conflict, it is an interesting change of pace, because generally they just rely on something happens in the town and there's a drama and conflict because of that, not because of something like inside. Not like it is harder, much harder to portray, but it is always interesting to me, even when it flounders at, you know, in execution. I don't know. This episode is so cool to me is because Homer is not a guy who doubts himself very often.
No, Homer is very confident in whatever he thinks.
And this is a time where he, I think one of the, like, fundamental realities of Homer is shaken. Something that is, like, there's not very many things I think that are like, in Homer's belief set that are concrete. And I think one of them certainly is Marge is my soulmate. Marge is my forever companion. And to see him question it and go through this conflict is completely novel and unique.
Indeed. It's something that really stands out about this episode. But after Homer is given cause to doubt this, Homer wakes up. Turns out he's on a golf course with a weird pyramid-shaped pro shop.
Let me stop you just for one moment, because mm-hmm. we were discussing what clips you hadn't had and had not pulled. This is the one I would
really.
Did not pull the talking dog bit. Come on.
No, because it's less than a second. Wait, it's totally not worth it.
Since you didn't feel like it was worth it, I did pull it for you.
Oh, did I dream that whole thing? Maybe the desert was just this sand trap. Oh, and I bet that crazy pyramid was just a pro shop. And that talking coyote was really just a talking dog.
Hi, Homer. Find your soulmate.
Hey, wait a minute. There's no such thing as a talking dog. Damn straight.
All right, maybe you're right. Maybe I should have pulled that. I also would have added Ken Brockman's security, and he has his little whistle.
The whistle is pretty bad. I think it is Homer returning to reality, and like I think that is important. Like just a plot distinction, I think, in that it is, I think, natural. They don't just try and force Homer immediately into, like, oh no, I need, something is wrong and something needs to change. It is like, no, that was just a weird dream. I ate insanity peppers. I'm going to go home, which is what he does.
I'm going to go home and verify that the world is the way I thought it was. But yeah. Unfortunately for Homer, not the case. Homer sees the kids. They seem happy enough, but warn him that Marge is a little bad. Homer, being his usual oblivious self, goes to Marge and tries to tell her about the weird things that happened to him, and ends up calling her a soulmate. And Marge, of course, is still practically livid about yesterday, and she erupts at him and says, "Don't soulmate me." This, of course, causes Homer to go on a weird downward spiral. Well, while Marge sleeps, Homer is up late pacing the floor, which is weird because, you know, Homer always falls asleep before Marge. But he basically says, oh, what if Marge is not my soulmate? And then goes on to compare things about them.
The coyote said my soulmate would understand me, but Marge doesn't understand me at all.
Maybe we're not kindred spirits. We don't have anything in common. Look at these records. Jim Neighbors, Glenn Campbell, the Doodletown Pipers. Now look at her records. They stink.
Homer has wonderful taste in music. I think we've established that before now.
What are you saying? That there's no value? Are you trying to imply that there's no value in the Doodletown Pipers, Matt?
I'm trying to say that I've never even heard of the Doodletown Pipers, if they even are a real band.
Jim Neighbors, Glenn Campbell, have you heard of them?
Those sound relatively familiar.
They're all real. Yes, they're the Doodletown Pipers. Wow, okay. Is a real band. Yes, they're all easy listening, you could say.
Ah, okay, gotcha. They're so wuss rock.
Not even that. That's like Hall & Oates, I would say. That's like I don't know. That's a soft rock from that time period, which I think honestly does have its merits. Easy listening is an older, more folky, I would say. It's a little bit folkier than the soft rock of the 80s. It's like country-fied soft rock, maybe, if I'm trying to describe it.
Okay, fair enough.
I guess.
Fair enough.
I think it's folky, folksy, country kind of.
Well, we already know Homer likes the Starland Vocal Band.
Exactly.
So, you know.
There you go. It's not too far. I don't like, and I think that's this. Her, obviously, she's very upset because he was gone all night, and now he's coming back after their big blow up fight already, and he, like you said, is trying to reestablish kind of fundamental rules. Like, yeah, this is just normal life again. We go back to our routine. And he's like, he wants, after having the coyote go like, no, is she your soulmate? And him like just immediately like, yeah, of course. Homer is insecure, honestly, about a lot of things. And he goes to Marge to verify. Like, yeah, we're soulmates, right? Even regardless if we're fighting. And she's not having it because she doesn't know any of the things Homer's gone through. She just views it as him trying to like use that stuff to placate her.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the way all of these usually work, is Homer tries to resolve something simply once and then has to go out and try it better. But this time it's a little more interesting because, you know, after Homer compares their records, he basically says, oh, you know, maybe Marge is my soulmate. I'm going to go find my soulmate, and walks off into the night. And we go to commercial.
Yeah, when we come back, it is Homer going around the Springfield and trying to, I don't know if he thinks he's going to find, I think he wants to find a soulmate. I don't think he necessarily thinks he's going to find one. I think he's more than just trying to find a person. He's trying to find what that is, even. Like, what does that soulmate look like? He goes to first a furniture store.
I always just figured my wife was my soulmate. But if it's not Marge, then who is it? Where do I begin looking?
This really goes beyond my training as a furniture salesman, sir. Now, if you don't want the sofa, I'll have to ask you to leave.
Beyond their training as a furniture store salesman. But they're open all night, though. So, honestly, I mean, I imagine that's the kind of person you're going to get at nighttime. Like, you know.
The midnight furniture store salesman.
Yeah, it's going to be like a bunch of bored kids, drunks coming from bars, and people who are crazy, like Homer. He goes to Moe's. He's like, well, where do all my friends congregate? And he goes, oh, well, I'll go to Moe's. I'll find my soulmate there for sure.
Hey, Barney, soulmate, let me buy you a beer.
Okay, but I'm not your soulmate. I'm really more of a chum.
Well, what about you, Lenny?
I'm a crony.
Carol?
I'd say acquaintance.
Godly sympathizer.
Compadre.
Associate.
Contemporary.
I'm a well-wisher, in that I don't wish you any specific harm.
Yep, that's what makes you a well-wisher, all right.
Well, Moe's version of a well-wisher, at least. You know, and I think, like, where else could Homer go after this? Like, he's exhausted most of the people in town that he knows.
That he knows, anyway.
Yeah, that he knows. And no one's even, like, none of them are like, yeah, we're soulmates. They're like, yeah, we know each other. We're not, you know. I think like that, I've mentioned this before, about a lot of people complain about Marge not having any friends in general.
But she has compadres.
She has I think Homer doesn't really have any like good friends either. I think that like this is. I don't think any of them. None of them go like, "You're my best friend." They just go, "Oh yeah, we know each other. We're associates. Yeah, we hang out.
We're pretty close." You know.
Yeah, like, but it's not like anything. Like, there's no like really close emotional bonds with anybody. At least not, especially in this scene. Everyone's just like, "Yeah, hey Homer. Yeah, we know you. We'll hang out, but we don't have like some profound mystical understanding. And Homer is frustrated. He is scared, honestly, I think. He is lonely. And we get him calling a GBM from the personal ads. Probably. It's a good little bit. Homer is not interested in a lot of things that GBM is selling.
Homer has no idea what GBM is.
Or who. Yeah, I'm not. We're not. Whatever. They leave it up to the imagination what's happening on the other end of that phone call, but it's fun to think about it. And we get a montage. Homer goes to the mayoral HQ, goes to the pet store, goes to community outreach. None of those places want him. They all turn him away. I don't know. I really like montages when they're used in this way, because I think they add a lot of depth and like time, like things. It feels like there's a lot of things happening without a lot of time being used. And I think I don't care in a 22-minute show if they're using montages a lot, because I feel like they effectively communicate exactly what they're going for. Also, they use At 17 by Janice Ian over it. It's a good. I think it really does capture the tone of
it. It really does. It's basically a Homer searching and not finding what he's looking for.
Yeah, it sets the tone even. Like, and I think that's I would probably complain a lot about the use of popular music in latter day Simpsons episodes, because it feels like they're not tonally consistent with what's happening in the episode. I feel like this song actually is very good at that. Right along with the use of the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly theme, I think this, the music, the licensed music in this is very good. He eventually ends up at the docks, I guess, in no one's lair. He sees the lighthouse, I like how the first, like, in a weird way, this episode is like two halves more than it is three thirds, in the way that we get a lead up of Homer eventually, you know, going to the cook-off, going insane, and then coming out of it. And then in the second half, if you will, like from the middle of the second act to the end of the episode, it is Homer again leading up, going crazy, and then coming out of it again. In one, this isn't a dreamscape, yeah. And one is in a real world.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I feel like the entire, I think it works best as thirds, because the entire first act is Homer, you know, with the whole chili thing. The second act really has nothing to do with that. It's just Homer being insane and causing him to question his whole soulmate status. And the third act is him resolving that. I actually kind of feel like the first act is basically one of those long introductory sequences that we always criticize them for, that have nothing to do with the rest of the episode. And this one has more to do with it than others, because it also leads to Homer, you know, Marge getting mad at Homer for, you know, acting weird. But I don't know. I feel like it's a half. The second and third acts focus on as a good, you know, first half, second half. But the first half, first third, before the commercial break, is just an intro, and a very extended intro to what's actually going on in the episode.
I think it is. I mean, it's setting up going to the Chili Festival, but I think it is important in the fact that it is setting up Marge's anxiety. Like, she is going to great lengths to get not to avoid going to the festival with Homer, and like, she wouldn't go to those lengths unless she was worried, unless she was stressed out about it. And I feel like that is important. I think it is kind of. I don't think it. This episode means nearly as much without that. I feel like, and Marge not telling Homer about it, instead of discussing with him and saying, hey, this is something that really bothers me and I get very anxious, and instead it is Homer suddenly discovering that she's hiding something from him. Him going, no, I want to go to the cook-off, and then her like declaring an ultimatum instead of like calmly discussing things like you should as a partners. And, you know, it is blowing up. And I think things like that are kind of that base is important to establish Homer questioning the relationship to such a big degree. I don't think if you suddenly had, I think they do a good job of like laying that out simplistically and not making, it doesn't feel unbalanced a lot of the time in a lot of like Marge Homer relationship problem episodes, where you go like, oh, clearly Homer's wrong, or clearly Marge is wrong. It is, I don't really blame either of them for their behavior in this. Where the hell were we? Oh, the lighthouse. So Homer sees the lighthouse, and this is him kind of going crazy again a little bit, like going down into like that dreamscape is a good metaphor for Homer, you know, questioning his life and his decisions, and the coyote as a spirit guide and all that. But I feel like that journey up into the lighthouse is the same kind of thing. It's him climbing that mountain again. You know, it is him going, you know, through work, physical labor of like climb, like walking through the ocean, which is like, it's a good sight gag too, of him walking through the bare sand, and then the ocean like hitting him and him being covered in like barnacles and seaweed and stuff. He sees the name of the lighthouse keeper, the loneliest man in the world, who obviously would be his soulmate. His name is Earl.
Earl. My new friend's name is Earl. Here I come, buddy. No more loneliness for Homer and Earl. A machine? Earl's a machine? Oh, that's just perfect. Homer's desperate search for a soulmate has yielded a lighthouse-keeping robot. Oh, wow.
Hey, look, is that Dad?
Either that or Batman's really let himself go.
Alone. I'm alone. I'm a lonely, insignificant speck on a has-been planet orbited by a cold, indifferent sun.
I take offense at the has-been planet. Earth is still on its upswing, baby.
I don't know about that, Matt. I'm not altogether positive and confident of the way you are about that. Great Batman's let himself go.
That is amazing.
Really good. Homer, like, his last desperate hope for a soulmate is a robot. This pretty much directly taken from a Twilight Zone episode. BT Dubs, and he is, if his behavior before seemed crazy, now it is sort of like he thinks Homer devises a plan that he is going to break the lighthouse's light, and a ship is going to come and crash and bring him more friends. That is, that is crazy.
Well, when you're crazy, you know.
Yeah, it seems, that kind of behavior, I think it sells the desperation of Homer and how much, like, fundamentally this is shaking him. And they even do another kind of scene that shows his insanity until Marge finds him.
Well, I won't be lonely for long. What's that?
Oh, Homer! Thank goodness you're safe!
Marge?
I woke up and you weren't there and I was so worried.
Really? You were? But how did you find me?
Well, I was sure you'd be on foot, because you always say public transportation is for losers. And I was sure you'd head west, because Springfield slopes down that way. And then I saw the lighthouse, and I remembered how you love blinking lights, like the one on the waffle iron.
Or that little guy on the don't walk sign.
Yeah.
Well, Marge, you really do understand me. Gee, I thought we weren't soulmates because...
We had a fight?
Right, and we don't like the same things. It's like you're from Venus.
And you're from Mars.
Oh, sure, give me the one with all the monsters.
Homer, don't you see? Our differences are only skin deep.
But our seams go right down to the bone. Maybe we do have a...
A profound, mystical understanding?
Hey! We do! Oh, Marge! We're number one! We're number one! In your face, Space Coyote!
Space Coyote?
Yep.
Oh, I say that sometimes.
Well, yeah, I mean, whenever something good happens, you have to say, in your face, Space Coyote, or it doesn't even count.
Space Coyote. But the way Marge behaves in this really sells kind of... I don't think this fight was as big a deal to her as it was. Like, she seems to... After that, she kind of blows up at Homer in the backyard... And then we don't really see her again until this moment. And it feels very much like she was angry at him. She blew up at him. And then I guess it kind of, it happens, like time goes by. You just kind of naturally you can't hold on to that anger for very long. It just kind of fades away. And then her love and caring about her husband is still there. And, you know, she goes to bed and she's like, well, she generally doesn't go to bed before Homer. Homer always falls asleep before her. And I feel like her surprise at him not being there, like, I think she expected the same from him. Like, I don't think it was as big a deal to her as it was to him. I think that, and that's another thing that I like in this episode, is that it is Homer questioning the relationship, and it's all, like I said, it's kind of introspective on him, not necessarily anything that Marge is doing explicitly. It is...
Yeah, it sorry, go ahead.
No, you...
I was going to say, it's very interesting, because instead of, one being completely right and the other one being a jerk, a la most episodes of Marge and Jerk Homer, it's Marge just being, you know, a little upset but being reasonable about it, and a Homer discovering something. It's more realistic. I mean, I know there are real life jerks out there, but they don't really change. What Homer does by the end of every episode, that is a Homer and Marge conflict. This episode is more akin to what really happens between adults.
Yeah, and also... I think before we've touched on how Homer literally couldn't survive without Marge taking care of him. Like, every time he's been left alone, either by her leaving or by her being upset at him, either way, he falls apart. He can't take care of a household. He can't even barely take care of himself. And it's always been established that way in, like, physical means. Like, he can't cook food. He can't do laundry. He is that stereotype of the man child who has been taken care of his whole life and now can't, like, do fundamental things to take care of a person that you are required to if you live alone. And this episode with, you know, that those Homer going crazy the second time part and those tinkling noises and, like, and his laughter, like, it really is eerie. And it sells Homer's well-being not just physical well-being. It is mental well-being. It is his mental health is really, Marge is fundamentally important to his mental health as well as his physical health. Like, he loses her and questions her as his soulmate through no fault of her own. And he is... goes crazy. Like, his it's more than just like, oh, I love her and so I want her to be my soulmate. Like, his whole worldview is being shattered without her there.
Well, yeah, because Homer has always just assumed that Marge is his soulmate, and this is one of the first episodes that I can think of that really caused Homer to go back and reevaluate what's important to him. Because I mean, I guess in Grandpa Simpson versus Sexual Inadequacy, I think that's the episode name, it kind of gave Homer the opportunity to rethink his relationship with his father, but this is the first time where Homer has really had to, you know, from his perspective, change the way he thinks about Marge, and it basically produced an episode that is completely new. It's not something we've thought about, and honestly, I don't think it's something they've done again since this happened, because there's a whole bunch more Homer Marge relationship episodes, but they're all Homer doing something stupid and Marge having to put up with it. They're never Homer developing as a person throughout the episode.
Yeah, it's a novel thing, and I think that's why it is incredibly unique in the show, not just in, like, this very specific canon of episodes. Like, it is an introspective thing, and, like, Homer goes on a journey, and it is not one of, oh, I need to not be a jerk. It is, like, am I, like, it's like, very fundamental, like, identity of Homer. Like, what am I? Who am I? What is this relationship? Am I, like... Everything is, I think, when Homer questions if Marge is his soulmate, it's not just him questioning that relationship, it's kind of questioning everything about his existence, because Marge is the cornerstone of his existence.
Yeah.
Marge finds Homer, realizes that the lighthouse is out, and there's a ship coming for them. And they should probably do something about that. Marge quickly does. Apparently, lighthouses just have giant light bulbs.
It's true. They have giant 40,000 watt bulbs.
Yeah, and they're just in those cardboard sleeves, just like you pick up at the hardware store or whatever. she replaces light. The sea captain who is piloting a very important delivery of short shorts, of hot pants, sees it. Unfortunately, they still crash. Did they crash just because of incompetence at that point, or is it just too late?
I think it's just too late at that point. That's the whole point of lighthouses is that they keep them from getting too close, because at a certain point you just can't stop a big ship. You have to have plenty of time to turn.
Yeah, they have a lot of momentum behind them. They don't break, so to speak. They have anchors. Inertia is much harder in water than it is on land. However, they crash, but who cares? Because all those short shorts, they wash up on the shore. And Matt, who doesn't like short shorts?
No one doesn't like short shorts.
Look at all them hot pants.
Hey, who likes short shorts?
We like short shorts.
I just wanted to include some of the song. I like it.
Well, that's a good song. It's a very important, significant song.
I like the saxophone. If I would have gone, it gone another like 10, 15 seconds, the saxophone solo's on there. But we're not going to play like 45 seconds of Who Likes Short Shorts, even however much I like the song. Matt, I don't know if you can tell. I really like this episode.
I could tell. I kind of figured. You talked about it a lot.
I've been thinking about it ever since I watched it again, and it is one of those episodes that rewards you for watching it over and over again. It rewards you for like kind of analyzing and digging into it. It has depth, and is incredibly unique. It is incredibly different than most Simpsons episodes. It is like, we talk a lot about how this is a Homer episode, or if this is a Marge episode, or it's a Bart episode, or a Lisa episode. And very rarely, even when those are those types of episodes, do they actually involve do they actually concern themselves with the fundamentals of the characters? It usually just means, this episode has mostly Homer in it. It is not necessarily about
it concerns
Homer.
Their viewpoint, especially.
Yeah, it's not necessarily like, we're going to dig into what makes Homer Homer, what makes him tick, or what makes Lisa tick, or how they function in this world, in this show, and all that. Like, they very rarely do that. In this episode, I think, actually does really fundamentally, I'm using that word a lot, it seems, concern itself with how Homer works in his relationship with Marge, how he works in Springfield, how he works in the show. And I love this episode. And on top of that, it is extremely funny, extremely well written, and beautifully
animated.
Yeah, beautifully animated with the and not to say that all most Simpsons episodes after season one are well animated. Like they at that point they've developed their style guide. They know what characters look like, and you occasionally get weird off model stuff, but not very often. And after they gone to digital painting, they've kind of eliminated all the inconsistencies they can. But you don't really see them, outside of the couch gags now, you never really see them stretch the kind of animation they do. It's all very much like, we do the house style, you see them do, a Lego episode, and then, suddenly everything's in Legos. Or they do Trials of Horror, and they let things be a little bit extra slimy. But other than that, they don't really necessarily stretch the bounds of what their animation can do. In this case, you get to see them do, and it took a lot of work. I mean, David Silverman hand animated that entire sequence. And, I imagine that took a long time and was hard work, but it shows in this episode. This is, I think, another evergreen episode that will always work. The Simpsons could have been gone for 60 years. You could show someone this episode, and it always will make sense. And Dan Castanet's performance is really, really good.
That's true. I would also like to point out the sound editing in this is great, because while Homer is in his weird hallucinogenic state, everything sounds different. There's a little bit of extra reverb. There's a little bit of, pitchy changes that make that world feel even more real or surreal, I guess.
Yeah, well, an alternate reality. It is like, hey, it differentiates itself from normal Springfield, normal The Simpsons. And I think that is incredibly important, and it does a really good job at that. And they don't do that just by animation. They don't do that just by Homer's performance. They don't do it just by, having a talking coyote look different. It is also the sound design. It is conceptually everything about it sets it apart. Great episode. One of my favorites.
Yerp.
Matt confirms it is one of my favorites.
It's a really good episode. I mean, like you said, this is one of those episodes that the more you watch it, the more you really get out of it. The more you notice the tiny little details, the animation, the sound, Johnny Cash's incredibly underrated performance. Just that, and the fact that it's a relationship episode that, you know, comes from character, but does so in a way that's unusual for Homer. You get a lot of these kind of character type moments for the other characters, like you said, but Homer is generally not one of them. Homer stuff usually happens to him, not inside of him. And that's fresh enough that this is one of those episodes that still gives you a lot to think about.
We will rank it at the end of the show. Next up is my favorite episode. We do have some submissions. First up from Greg. Good evening, gents. First and foremost, great work on the show to this point. I've been following the podcast for about 2 months as of this writing at the end of April 2016. Made it more than halfway through your catalog. It's a year ago. Makes for a good listen during my lengthy commute to from work. Anyway, I want to check in regarding my favorite episode. The title of favorite episode is of great significance for any long-term Simpsons fan. And as someone who has followed the series for the better part of 20-plus years until very recently, my personal fave has never wavered in my eyes from the first time I saw it one evening as a 12-year-old. It's been a rare treat to see broadcast on occasion. It was the main reason I chose Season 8 as the first DVD season I purchased. I, of course, preferred Episode 3, F24, the ninth episode of Season 8, El Viaje Misterioso de Nuestro Homer, Mysterious Voyage of Homer. Top to bottom, this episode represents everything The Simpsons was for me growing up. Marge's desperate, ultimately futile efforts to conceal the evidence of the chili cook-off from Homer, the bizarre short shorts dance party juxtaposed against Marge and Homer's reconciliation, the mention-shattering fever dream that is the second act, demonstrated the situational humor, irreverent gags, genuine heart, and invented creativity that we know and love the series for. Top that with the incomparable Johnny Cash that's brilliantly cast in Mysterious Space Coyote. We have an all-timer in my book. The fact that this episode is bookended by two other iconic, in my opinion, episodes, Hurricane Eddie and The Springfield Files, only adds to its legend. In particular, I appreciate they even took the time to design the Space Coyote with largely angular features, differentiating it from real-world Simpsons animals. All in all, this represents everything I love about the series at its height. Cheers. Secondly, this is from James Sackow from Merry Old England. If I could only take one Simpsons episode onto a desert island, it would be El Viaje Misterioso de Nuestro Homer, The Mysterious Voyage of Homer. Watching the original airing as a 12-year-old, I was mesmerized by the chili trip animation. The animation as a whole was such a brave and radical departure from the norm, and the hallucination sequence masterfully evoked the work of Salvador Dali and the Surrealists. I admit the merits of this episode lie more with its profundity than with its humor. Life is a journey of discovery, and more than being passive observers, viewers drawn in to experience Homer's personal voyage with him. The emotional rollercoaster begins with the serenity of the family home, takes us through deep detached loneliness and soul-searching, only to come full circle again by the end. While the climax may have been a touch too convenient and contrived, the fact that something so ambitious crammed into the standing running time makes this more than excusable. As a story akin to the fabled hero's journey, this episode could have conceivably been run to feature length. In addition, we have the admittedly wise and authoritative voice work from Johnny Cash, certainly one of the greatest guest appearances ever. There's some wonderful scene-setting music at 17 and short shorts. Visually, there is gorgeous ambient variety with beautiful renderings of the golden sunset, the clouds of the moon at night, and the waves crashing around the lighthouse. Finally, and despite having the feel of quite a serious episode, the overriding theme being relationship difficulties, there are plenty of hilarious subtle sight gags and quotable lines, too. Favorites being Oregano, what the hell, in the all-night furniture store, Daddy, are you going to jail, I, the hot pants, and, well, of course, Everything Looks Bad if you remember it. Also, shout out to the 9 synonyms for soulmate used at Moe's. Clearly, the writers hadn't lost their perspicacity that day. Thank you, both James and Greg, both very astute and, I don't know, very lovely descriptive missives? I don't think missives is the right word, but missives has a pejorative tone, a negative tone to it.
No, it doesn't. A missive is just a letter someone sends you that's more important than just a regular letter.
Okay, then. They are more important than regular letters. So, okay, then I'm right. Thank you for confirming that I'm correct, Matt. Appreciate that.
That's what I'm here for. Also telling you when you're stupid.
I mean, those are your two main roles. But if you have a favorite episode, submit it to simpsonshowpod@gmail.com, explaining why it is your favorite. I'll read it when we get to that episode. Next up, Matt, is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments to the news group is where I'll comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group and see what people were talking about a week or two after an episode debuted. See what they thought about it. See if there's anything newsworthy going on, all that kind of stuff. Divided opinions on this one.
I can definitely see that because I feel like unless something is a very traditional Simpsons episode, there's a certain class of news group participant that will be very down on it. They don't like new things. They don't like expounding the narrative at all, which this episode definitely does.
Also, some people did not like the animation, Matt.
Shocking.
I didn't like that it was different. Wah. You changed my thing.
Oh, no. You can never change the thing I love.
I liked the thing before. Don't make the thing different. Also, kind of interesting. There was an interesting discussion about ratings. Because they were talking about the ratings prior for Hurricane Nettie, which finished relatively high because there wasn't much competition. It was right after Christmas, before New Year's. A lot of people on holiday or vacations or year end, you know, important things that aren't necessarily watching new episodes of shows, and there's not much competition. And even then, they were pointing out, like, the highest rated show at the time was Seinfeld with a 14. And this episode in particular got like a 9. So it tells you know, the difference. But people are pointing out, like, and I think that's an interesting trend to today, and why I kind of bring it up, is because TV ratings were falling even then in the mid to late 90s, 96, 97. You know, typical ratings, you know, if you looked earlier, were in the 20s, high of the number one shows, you know, 22, 23, 24. Like, Bart Gets an F, the highest rated show ever for The Simpsons was 30. And you look at The Simpsons nowadays, they are usually the highest rated show on Fox for the week, and they get ones to twos.
Whoa, whole ones and twos? That's crazy popular.
I mean, even like the best, like Walking Dead and those types of phenomenons, Breaking Bad, when it was, you know, finishing up, and all those types of phenomenon adult shows don't even do that much better either. Like, TV ratings have been falling consistently over the past. It's not like that's a new thing. Like, people are talking about it today because I think it's finally impacting bottom line numbers for advertisement and stuff like that. But it's been happening for a long time. People have, I mean, I'm taking these news. I'm finding this news on the internet from 1997. Like, there was, even in 1997, there was people, there were more channels adding basic cable and satellite was burgeoning and the internet was starting to become a thing. And I think if you looked back then and saw that the ratings were dropping for the best top shows then, you could still see that happening today. Like, it's not surprising. Yeah. It's a long trend that's just happening, that's just, like, finally becoming truly impactful now as we are getting so many options. But I think that's very interesting that The Simpsons, in its creative peak, was, you know, it was noteworthy for it to be 18th in the ratings. And nowadays, when most people consider it very hit and miss, I myself included, it is the top rated show on Fox every week, especially, and does good ratings, you know, for the time. But there are ones or twos, not eights, which is like four times whatever.
It's like Game of Thrones season premiere.
Yeah, exactly. We can move on. It is time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Listener question of the week this week is, what is the worst characterization in any given episode? Interesting question. It's kind of a tough question, honestly.
You have to know a lot about the characters and, you know.
Yeah, and it's not easy. Like, I think everyone has their, like, hey, this is my favorite, off the top of their head, my favorite Mo episode or whatever. You can go like, oh yeah, there's like three or four Mo episodes I like, and probably this one's my favorite. This is a little, it's a thinker, and I appreciate everyone took the time to answer. First from Daniel, on a clear day, I can't see my sister. Lisa taking a restraining order out on Bart and continuously tormenting him by poking him with a stick to keep him away from her. Subsequently, his own home and family, even deliberately pushing him into the gay interest section of a bookstore, is so wildly out of character for Lisa, the episode is unwatchable for me. From Austin, the drawn-out struggles of Lisa in later episodes. She's a depressed child struggling with her status. I get that. However, she starts coming off as a whiny kid. She has two parents who love her very much, plenty of food to eat, a roof over her head. She still finds a reason to complain or condescend to her peers, and it just got boring. I think that doesn't only, like, I think a problem with later episodes is that all these characters get pigeonholed into specific things, and it's not just, I mean, Lisa, that is Lisa's pigeonhole, but, like, all of them get, like, hey, we have to, these characters do these types of episodes, just do them over and over and over again because we know what to do. From David, for me, I just can't see Mr. Burns yearning for Bobo. While it is a great episode, the effort that he put into chasing it down seemed out of character. Now, if it turned out the bear was filled with a super rare filling that made it worth millions, for it had a solid gold heart placed in the chest cavity, that I could see. Hey, maybe it does have a solid gold heart. Rosebud 2. Lindsay, my answer is less specific. I really don't like the direction they've taken Ned Flanders in recent years. He seems less of a realized character and more of a straw man of the intolerant Christian stereotype in several episodes. Yeah, they definitely have done that. From Mike, a Pooh in 8 Misbehaving. It does provide the fun banana bread line, I'll give it that, but I feel like before Kids, Pooh was almost always cheerful and positive, with some exceptions like his Billy and the Clonosaurus rant. But him becoming such a beleaguered father has made him pretty callous and negative moving forward. I can't remember the last time his high intelligence and devotion to his job were really mentioned. Yeah, I think, Pooh's gotten dumber and, like, more Mo-like over the years.
Really Mo-like, you think?
Like, I mean, you talk about, like, him, they show him with his kids, and he's like, I wish I was dead. Like, they do things like, just
well,
like...
Well, it happens to most people when they have kids.
That's not fair, Matt. I know lots of parents who, yes, appreciate the children a lot of heart, but they also love and cherish their children and spend as much time
they
as they
do. They probably don't have 8.
That's true. They probably don't have 8. I don't know anyone with 8 kids. I do know someone with 5. But
that's,
they are...
That's crazy.
They're still, they're still generally pretty happy, though, so I don't know. Is he in My Fair Lady? Lisa trains Willy to be a proper gentleman. I love Willy, and thankfully at the end of the episode he goes back to his old ways. Yeah, it's a I kind of like the episode, but it's kind of weird. I don't know. And finally, let's see. Jonathan, Bonfire of the Manatees, worst of the worst example of jerkass Homer. But yeah, it's not. That's what's. We'll get to Bonfire of the Manatees eventually. Yeah. Josh at Josh Horton 32. Bart after dark. March gets annoyed with Lisa immediately with no knowledge about it. Becomes the biggest opponent of the burlesque house. Normally, she thinks things through more, and she's usually more accepting. Mitch at Mitch Doyle 13. Ralph before he ate all that glue. she certainly tamed that horse. Yes, but what man can tame her? The quote is specifically from Lisa's pony. But yeah, Ralph is gone. He is, again, that pigeonhole thing where he's just the kid that says dumb things now. Francis at FM Warner, Bart and My Sister, My Sitter, more twisted and disturbing than simply mischievous. Midnight Philly at midnight on the third day. Homer's attitude towards Flanders and when Flanders failed is very harsh, something we had never seen before at that point. Danny at Woosh Danny H. I can make a case initially, make a case for the initial Plow King scene. Was really out of character for Barney. I mean, he shot Homer's tires and laughed. Yeah, Mr. Plow, Barney, that is pretty openly antagonistic when none of that has ever been established.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I think you have to take that kind of as a conceit of that episode. Finally, Dr. Richter 915, at Richter 915. Just about any Homer Marge fight episode, Homer just being over the top savage, whereas most episodes, he knows that without Marge, he'd die. That's very true.
Yeah.
We talked about it. What's your answer, Matt?
I actually have to agree with Ned Flanders. I don't think it's happened recently. I think it actually happened somewhere around season 4 or 5, where they took him from the perfect neighbor stereotype to the fundamentalist Christian, which I'm sure is easier to rail against. But I feel like having Flanders be a more wholesome, rounded character would probably have been more interesting in the long run. I think there was a lot left on the table for his characterization the way it was before what it turned into.
Yeah, I think Flanders is... I think that was, again, like I mentioned the pigeonholing thing, like I think it was fine. Like, I don't mind him, his Christianity in the golden years, even up to like season 10. But then like all those characters, like, I feel like that's all they have for him. Like, he is Christian. And then after Maude dies, he is single. He's a single dad. Like, that's all they have. Like, we have, these are the things he is. We can't do anything more or less. Let's just make it this and do episodes about this. And it's, you can only do that so much before it gets tiring and very restrictive. My answer is Strong Arms of the Maw with Marge, where they make Marge a rapist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's because the steroids did it, Robbie. It wasn't Marge.
I understand what the popular conception of steroids is. It's not like that drastic change in character. That doesn't happen. You don't, like...
How do you know, Robbie? Have you been on steroids?
I was in weightlifting for many years, and while not myself taking steroids, I knew people who certainly did. And
well, aren't you a smarty pants then?
It gives you more testosterone. Yeah, you're a little bit more aggressive, but you're not suddenly a rapist. And doing that to a character, like, it's like, it might as well, that might as well be character assassination. Like, doing, like, making it, like, if it was Homer doing that, no one would watch it ever again. But because it's Marge, they like, and it like, it's negative in the fact that it kind of like just like it further like ignores the problem of male victims of rape and makes Marge awful person just because she starts to lift, like, it does a bad job of making, like, it gives her suddenly instead of like saying that she has PTSD, like she's a victim of a robbery, and yes, that can be a traumatic experience and affect someone's mental health. But it doesn't give you agoraphobia. It gives you It could give you PTSD or something similar to that, and like it is like irresponsible about like psychological and mental health. It is irresponsible in Marge's character and making her suddenly a rapist and a monster just because she starts taking steroids. Like it's like so cartoonish. Like, and I think that's a complaint about a lot of later episodes. Like it becomes a cartoon instead of a thing about with real people in it. And it's no, thank you.
Nope.
No, thank you. Next week's question is, what is your favorite Marge Homer episode?
Ooh, that's really tough.
There's a lot of them. If you're going to pair any two characters, they probably have the most, I would imagine. Probably by or maybe Lisa. What do you think the second most popular pairing?
Second most popular.
I think Marge and Homer are the most.
Marge and Homer are the most, yeah.
But after that, maybe, yeah. I don't either.
I think Bart Homer.
Bart Homer, not Homer Lisa, yeah. or Bart and Lisa?
No, Bart and Lisa maybe, but it's Bart Homer, I feel like.
Okay, there's a lot of Bart and Lisa episodes. And Lisa does pair way more often with Homer than she does with Marge. But I think that you mentioned that earlier. They don't pair anyone with Marge a lot of the time. It's very rare that they do that.
Because The Simpsons is all about Homer, obviously.
I'm fine with Homer taking the lead and being the lead a lot of the time, but you're doing tons of episodes. There's plenty of room for other characters, which I think another complaint about later seasons. But I'll post this question on all over social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod, and you can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Any of those places, reach out, follow, like, subscribe, you know, social media things. We can move on to our next segment. It is time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and each challenge each other with three trivia questions. One easy, one medium, one hard. Try and stump the other. We do have a wager for this season. The loser must record themselves singing on video a Simpsons song of the winner's choosing. Matt is stomping me this season. Normally, it's a slow it's a slow escalation to you stomping me at the end. Now, it's just right in the beginning, get stomped. But I'm going to do my darndest.
Well, you know how much I hate to sing, Robbie.
You sing to me every time we start recording.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. I was thinking of something else.
Oh, okay. Got it. I'll start us off with your easy question, Matt. You ready?
All right.
These are all from the season 14 episode, Strong Arms of the Maw.
Oh, God. Fine.
Your easy question. Marge receives steroids from who?
From who? I'm going to say Dr. Nick.
Sorry, it's incorrect.
No.
Ruth Powers.
Oh, that's right. She comes back and she's like ridiculously swole. I forgot about that.
That is true. What is my easy question?
All right, so your easy question for today. In Grift of the Magi, what is the name of the toy the kids design?
Oh, God. That awful, ugly thing. It looks like a Furby. Right? It does look like a Furby, right?
It might.
You can just... That does not give away the name, Matt. You can tell me it looks like a Furby. It is the... I feel like I'm making this up. I don't... That can't be the right name. I can't... That can't be it.
All right, then.
Is it the Love Bug? Cuddle Bug? Something like... What is it? That's my answer.
It is Funzo.
Funzo! Oh, that's a terrible name. Gosh, okay. It's a good name for their purposes, mm-hmm. but it is a bad name. Your medium question. What is the name of the bodybuilding competition Marge competes in?
The bodybuilding competition?
The
Iron Maiden fitness competition? Iron Maiden fitness competition. That's what I'm going to go with.
I'll give you... That's not completely correct, but I will give you...
Aww.
I'll give you a point. I'll give you half credit. It is the Iron Maiden fitness pageant, but...
Well, of course, it's about women. It has to be a pageant.
Of course it does, but I'll give you half credit for that because you did get most of it, but not all of it.
I got the important part, you know?
Are you saying the word pageant isn't important?
I'm saying it's not important at all.
I think what you just said... prior to that statement completely actually negates what you just said because mm-hmm. you it says something important about how the way we view women and the way they compete.
Yeah, fair enough.
What's my medium question?
Your medium question, what body part does Bart break in Grift of the Magi?
I am completely perplexed by this. I was like, wait, Bart breaks a part in that box? Grift of the Magi. That dumb funzo thing. Is that where he breaks his butt? His butt.
You know, I'll give you a point, I guess. Technically, he breaks his coccyx, but it's close enough, I guess.
Come on, that's his butt!
No, it's coccyx, babe.
What's the difference between a coccyx and a butt?
The coccyx is your butt bone. There are different parts of your butt that you can...
What other part of your butt can you break?
You could break the skin, you could pull the muscle.
Oh, come on, man! It's the butt bone! What do you think when I say I broke your arm, I'm not saying he broke his fibula.
Fine, well, technically there are two bones you could break in your arm, so...
Okay, if I say I broke my wrist, yes, I know it's not a wrist bone, it has a technical name, but you know what I'm saying? If I broke my elbow, I'm not saying, like, I broke the elbow, I'm saying the bone inside.
Sure. I was referring to more to your upper arm bone and your lower arm bone.
You're so stringent.
Fibia and your ulna.
You're killing me. I don't think you understand how much you're destroying me by. Your hard question. What is seen in Strong Arms of the Maw for the first time since season 6?
What is seen or who is seen?
What is seen?
What is seen since season 6? I'm going to say the Bolarama.
That is incorrect. It is Ion Springfield.
Really?
Eight season gap for Ion Springfield. It is seen in, what's the name of the Burns movie with the critic crossover? Burns, it's Burns something.
A Star is Burns.
A Star is Burns. It's seen in A Star is Burns, not seen again until season 14. It is especially noticeable in Strong Arms of the Maw because Strong Arms of the Maw, they had transitioned to digital coloring. However, they reused the old Springfield, Ion Springfield intro, which is using traditional coloring. It is very noticeable, the difference, because one is traditional hand painted, the other is digital. What's my hard question, Matt?
All right, so your hard question, as you no doubt identified, Bart breaks his butt, causing the Springfield Elementary to install some handicap ramps. What are those handicap ramps made of?
Oh, the mob makes them, don't they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They are made out of something ridiculous. Everything falls apart, like, immediately after they leave.
There are three ingredients I'm looking for here.
Three ingredients. Okay, probably I can get... I'll be lucky if I get one. Pipe cleaners, styrofoam, and Elmer's glue.
Unfortunately, you got zero of them. Okay. It is actually breadsticks, paint, and shellac.
Okay. Those are good. Those are good things. I was just thinking, like, what's, like, cheap, crafty things? That's all I was thinking.
Yeah.
But the breadsticks is a nice touch. Italian mobsters building things with breadsticks. It's really good. This episode's running extraordinarily long, so we're going to jump ahead to our last segment. Segment we end every episode with. It is time for Best Episode Ever!
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show where Matt and I rank the episodes categorically, so we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. I'm looking very high for this one, Matt.
I know. It's just, it really is a good, really good episode. I'm definitely thinking probably top 10, I think.
I'm looking higher than that, I think.
Whoa, where would you put it?
Number 3.
3, above Bart Sells His Soul.
Yeah.
Wait. Are you telling me you're putting this above You Only Move Twice?
Yes. Yes, I am. That is explicitly what I'm saying. It's better than You Only Move Twice.
I was waffling between 3 and 4, but yeah, 3 sounds perfect for me. This is a really good episode, and it explores something that is so rare in The Simpsons, but keeps the sense of humor that is so important.
Yes, I think that I would put it above Bart Sells His Soul because I think this is funnier than Bart Sells His Soul, and is also incredibly soul-searching, much like Bart Sells His Soul is. I think Summer 4 for 2 probably still does go right over the top for me just because it feels like it has a little bit stronger. I don't know. Like, I can't, at this point, it's hard for me to like, even kind of like, I obviously have spent a lot of time in this episode talking about why I think it's so good. But when I'm trying to like say why Summer 442 is better, it's hard for me to go other than I feel like it is. I feel like it does something really special and unique with Lisa. I think Cape Fear, I think about why Cape Fear is number one and why it stayed number one for so long. And I think mainly because it has the family functioning as, like as a whole for the most of the episode. It has a lot of interesting dynamics in it that not, again, like this episode, you don't really see in a lot of other episodes, you know? I think it's a very special thing, a very unique thing. But I contemplated putting this number one, at least.
I would have watched it.
I was going to say, at least trying to argue for it. I'm not saying it's going to end up there, but I thought about it. But three is me being kind of, I don't know. I feel like, man, this episode, I could just sit down and watch this episode all right now again and still just love every second of it. It's just like, it's one of those ones I could watch back to back to back to back over and over and over again and never get tired of it. Just has everything I want out of a Simpsons episode. So that's number three on our list. That was easy. I was expecting a little bit more fight from you, Matt.
Like you said, throughout this episode, you kind of wore me down and showed me what's really special about this episode, and I completely agree.
So number three on our list is El Viaje Misterioso de Nuestro Homer, Mysterious Voyage of Homer. I'm not typing all that on our list. I'm typing Mysterious Voyage of Homer is number three. Number one on our list is still Cape Fear. In last place is Homer's Odyssey. 152 will be supplanted at some point in the future. Next up, Matt, you know what's next?
I have no idea.
Speaking of the X-Files, it is time for...
Oh, no, already?
It is time for the Springfield Files, yeah.
Oh my god!
X-Files Simpsons crossover episode. A spectacular. I don't know if I'm going to say it's as good as Mysterious Voyage of Homer, but it's certainly memorable and certainly a lot of fun. I think that is the thing I remember mostly about Springfield Files. It is a fun episode. It plays fast and loose with the characters of Mulder and Scully and the format of the X-Files, and I think it's all the better for it. But that's next week. Find this list at our website, simply thesimpsonsshow.com. Links to everything there, to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed, to our Patreon. If you want to throw us a couple bucks, help the show continue, we would obviously appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. Please check out my other podcast, The Handsome Boys Comics Hour. It's about comic books. And The Serial Fanaticist. It's about a lot of stuff. Cool, fun, nerdy things. Matt does not participate in social media unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer. You will not find him.
Oh, that's true. I have gone into hardcore prep mode. So unless your message really needs to get to me for my dastardly plan, those contractors, you know who you are. Don't bother. Not this week.
The vagueness of that answer is incredibly kind of harrowing. And then that little self-assured, I don't necessarily like that either, Matt. You're not, okay, I don't really care what you're planning as long as this podcast, we can continue to do this, right? That's fine.
Absolutely. I can do this from any dimension.
Okay, cool. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching the Simpsons.